I'd like to actually start this episode by making a correction.
Okay.
From last week.
Are you preempting a bollock?
Possibly preempting a bollock. But actually, almost, I'm trying to avert something almost worse than that, which is genuinely misleading the Bean Listening public.
Becoming a node of disinformation.
Exactly. It's the last kind of node I've ever wanted to be. I've always wanted to be a positive node. It's kind of all I've ever really wanted in this life. A node that people can come to, can press, and, you know, extract different kinds of metaphorical liquid from. That's what a node is, isn't it?
A modern oracle of a node. Yeah.
A modern oracle of a node, yeah.
A truth gland.
A truth gland. A node, of course, is any form of hard sort of geological nipple, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is that what a node is?
The more you're talking about it, the less I know what a node is, I think.
So unfortunately, I've probably attracted a node bollocking through trying to avert a bollocking on something else, but that's often the way with these things. Yeah, no, so basically last week we talked about olives. That was the topic.
Yeah.
I recommended an olive sort of salad combo.
Right.
Which is a great favourite of mine.
Can you give us a recap?
Well, it was just a Greek salad, wasn't it?
Well, didn't you dress it up as if it's something you'd created?
It's a lovely little thing that I sometimes throw together. I don't know where these ideas come from. It was the same as my idea of pressing congealed cow fat cubes onto a hard hot bread surface. That's what my idea is.
Toast.
a toast, as I call it, yeah. Tomato.
Right.
Oh, you are going to go through it. Okay.
I'm going to go through it. Well, okay. It's tomato, feta cheese.
It's a Greek salad.
Olives. Mm-hmm. Black olives. Mm-hmm. Trying to explain how the flavour of olive works perfectly when triangulated with these other ingredients. But there's another ingredient which I got wrong, which is the herb.
Mm-hmm.
I, like an absolute idiot, said dill. Mm-hmm. You both had a go at me.
You were taking the task for that at the time.
Yeah, you both had a go at me. I then did what any mammal does.
You attacked.
Surrounded and bullied, which is I attacked. And I went, I mean, I wasn't thinking straight. The adrenaline was absolutely surging. I was in fight mode, and you remember I started trying to attack my screen. You'll remember that.
Well, before that, you started arching your spine, yeah, which was quite horrible to watch.
I arched my spine to make myself bigger.
Spitting venom at us from the insides of the sort of corners of your cheeks.
That's right.
And then pheromones started coming out of your temples.
That's right. I became the worst kind of mammalian sort of panic node. Yeah. Poison squitting, sort of squiffing out of my eyes, wasn't it? I never knew that the central tear duct in a state of real panic becomes what happens is your pancreatic acids get funneled up, don't they? Through the esophagus, down the back of the throat pipes, up through the head synapses and glands.
Oh, there were lots of surprises. I was amazed that your Adam's apple functioned as a rattle.
I know. A really intimidating rattle. I've had bats following me around all week because of the sonar I was letting off.
Awaiting their command.
It's nice to see that your neck is deflated since last week because I was worried that was going to stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the neck's come down, luckily. Yeah. We won't be hearing from Trident for a while. Let's put it that way.
What, the British nuclear program?
A nuclear deterrent?
Yeah, because I've completely... They've had to reset their entire radar system because of all the... All the sonar pulses I was pumping out.
Yeah, and all the blue whales have gone to Detroit, haven't they?
All the blue whales have gone to Detroit. There's no work there for them. It's not going to work well. Yeah, so I got angry. I panicked because you challenged me on. I was being challenged on herbs, which is something I've always felt I have a natural understanding of. I mean, for example, name a herb, and I can name three foods it goes with instantly.
Tarragon.
Chicken. Chicken mushrooms.
Yeah.
Egg.
Feathers? Were you going to say that?
No. No. Not feathers. No. Well, that's...
Mike, fire a herb in. Go on.
Part of the chicken.
Thyme.
Pork. Chicken. Egg. No. Because the herbs do have their little families. Thyme is good with chicken. It's good in a bolognese. It's good in anything rich and meaty. But thyme can also go nice with a bit of honey,
Tell you what's good with bolognese.
Yeah.
The best herb. Mixed herbs.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Mixed herbs is really the best.
Mixed herbs. It's such a great herb. Sage obviously goes with onion, liver, sort of slightly gross things. It's a tricky herb, sage. It's got
sage and bacon's nice.
But my little advice with herbs is get them into everything in big quantities. Don't let them go wet and horrible in your fridge. So just, you know, you only live once. Just put fistfuls of dill or thyme or whatever, mint, on anything.
Pair this herb. Chervil.
You fucking... I knew I shouldn't have taken you on. It's my one Achilles herb.
Chervil's a really high-rolling move, isn't it, in this little game?
I'm not 100% even sure what chervil is. I think it's... I tell you what, the vanilla of herbs is parsley, which you can just chuck around willy-nilly. It kind of makes no real difference to anything.
Your decorative herb.
It's a decorative herb, isn't it? It's more of a... to make it look like you've made an effort, isn't it?
Cannabis. Eh?
That goes well with, I think, just about blooming everything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'd pair that with a tube of Pringles and Fight Club on DVD.
That's a great show. That is the perfect use of that herb. Well done. So anyway, I suggested for tomatoes, feta and olives, I suggested dill, which is not right. I mean, it's not disastrous, but it's not right.
It would be disastrous. It would be ruinous.
There'd be so much cognitive dissonance going on for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It would be confusing, wouldn't it? Because herbs are very emotional, aren't they? They bring back memories. They bring back... They're the emotional heart of food.
You'd be patting yourself and your family down for the missing trout, is what you'd be doing.
Yeah.
You'd be so convinced that there must be a trout around that eventually you would just elect someone or something to be the trout, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And that could get very, very ugly. Very, very fast. Yeah, it's a fish herb, isn't it, Dill? It's a fish herb. There's no getting around it. But then Mike trying to save me, came in with basil, which I agreed with because I was feeling intimidated. No. I was sweating quite heavily and I was just in a bad place. But it's not basil. I mean, you can put basil with that, but it's because basil is in your mozzarella tomato salad, isn't it? Which is your Italian salad. It's mint. That's the herb to complete this salad. So it's tomato, feta cheese, black olives and mint. Maybe drizzled with a bit of olive oil. There you go. And a vinaigrette. is everything okay?
Well, are you okay, Henry?
I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
Does it feel good having said that? You've had a week to store that up.
I've had a week. I've had a week of anxiety about that. But
it's been on your shoulders this whole time.
Because I dread to think what people have been trying. But those four ingredients together, they give you a lovely little just a lovely little salad.
I think I mentioned oregano.
Again, that's wrong.
No.
In that salad context,
no,
it's wrong.
No.
I mean, oregano that's an Italian. That's a kind of pasta herb, is it? That could go in a bolognese.
For me, oregano is the taste of a Greek holiday.
Is it really?
Oh, is it?
But have I gone to a very specific place in Greece where somebody bought too much oregano?
I wonder. Yeah, I feel like it's very your pizzas, your pastas.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. I think we're trying to push things a little further east.
Yeah. Oregano is more your sort of Roman. That's your Roman flavour base.
Marjoram?
Parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. Is that one of the most egregious saying a word wrong so it scans? Rosemary.
Good point.
I didn't realise that as a kid. I thought it was parsley, sage, rose, mary and thyme. I didn't realise they were all herbs.
That's the ingredients for a great evening in, isn't it? Couple of herbs, couple of girls, and thyme.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn right.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
I mean, they've never been to Scarborough, those guys, have they?
Simon and Garfunkel?
Yeah. I
assume not.
Well, no, because Paul Simon spent a lot of time in the north of England, didn't he? Doing the folk clubs.
That's true. He did. He
there we go.
Clubs.
So he probably did. There's also probably about 18 Scarboroughs in the US as well, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, there must be.
But they're not talking about that. Also, if you go to a fair, why is there herbs at the fair? Like, what kind of fair is that? It's a farmer's market.
Good point. That sounds like a really crap fair, doesn't it?
It's a terrible fair.
Well, a farmer's market in the provinces is very different to your farmer's market in London, Henry. It's not, you know, He wouldn't have been going to a farmer's market and having a sort of fresh pulled pork calzone. Wouldn't it's not happening.
Yeah, let it out, Mike. Yeah, you've been throwing this up. Let it go. Let it out.
it would have been it would have been a fistful of rosemary and a bag of kidneys.
These are mixed kidneys. We don't ask too many questions there.
It's good for the price.
Almost 100% mammal. That's all we can.
If it was more true to life, it would be, are you going to Scarborough Fair? Pack of pants, five for a pound.
Yeah, and something dipped in toffee. In a way.
A pack of pants?
Yeah, a pack of pants. A
pack of pants.
Batteries that claim to be Duracell.
I like the line, remember me to all who go there, which means just like remind everyone that I exist.
Yeah.
So the instruction is to go around the fair going, oh, do you remember Paul Simon?
And people are still doing that to this day.
Was he the guy that came to this fair looking for herbs? I do actually remember him. It was absolutely crazy.
Gave him a bag of kidneys and he seemed to be happy enough, but...
He was the guy that said rosemary as if it was two different things.
But is that just how Americans say rosemary?
I doubt it. That would be a hell of a stroke of luck for the scanning of that song. I reckon that's just one of... Yeah. You know, there's many in the history of pop.
That's your artistic license.
You know, words that have been mangled, rhymes that have been forced. The main one, the most famous, of course, is... Never seen so many men asking if you wanted to dance.
Looking for a little romance.
Yeah. Given half the chance...
Lady in Red, of course, is about the kidney stall at Scarborough Fair. She's covered head to toe, spattered in kidney juices.
There's a cut verse about her kidney handbag, isn't it? Because she had one of her handbags was a kidney that was strung around with intestinal tubing, wasn't it?
It was a very, very rare African elephant kidney. So yeah. It was big enough for all of her keys, for her many lockups full of offal.
Yeah.
Just to get ahead of a bollocking, I understand that Simon and Garfunkel didn't write Scarborough Fair.
Oh, is it an old, is it a folk song?
Well, their version is based on the version by Martin Carthy, the English folk singer, but I think it's, you know, a proper old song from ye old times.
Mm, well done, Benjamin.
It's one of those great what ifs, isn't it? Is what if Christopher Berg had been a Scouser? The rhymes in that song would have made sense, wouldn't they?
How?
Well, never see so many men asking if you wanted to dance.
Yeah.
Looking for a little romance, giving half the chance. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to change your the rhymes actually work in a Scouse accent.
Maybe the songwriter was Scouse.
Mike, hello. The songwriter was Christopher. How very dare you?
The Frenchman Christopher. He was French.
He sounds like someone who came over with the Norman Conquest, doesn't he, Christopher?
He does. He sounds like someone who you can see
on the bio tapestry.
Yeah, who's famous for his three-headed axe. he could decapitate three, Anglo-Saxon noblemen at the same time.
The sort of knight that got a bit impatient and sort of raced ahead of everyone else for a bit and sort of started screaming obscenities only to be hacked to pieces.
By Bishop Odo. Yeah.
And turned into burr in the sense of butter and spread all over the battlefield.
I was just looking up to make sure that he isn't a Scouser. But he was born in Venado Tuerto, Santa Fe Province, Argentina.
Hey, Christopher Berg?
Yeah.
Or Burr? God, that's quite exciting.
Son of Hitler? It's possible. Are there other de Burr hits? Lady in Red, obviously, and Spaceman Came Travelling?
I think a lot of our audience won't know that song, and I don't really even know it, I don't think. I vaguely know it.
It's very well known, isn't it? It's part of the canon, surely.
Spaceman Came Travelling?
Yeah. The Christmas canon.
How does it go? Oh, is that Spaceman Came Travelling?
Yeah. And is it about Jesus, Mike?
Most definitely.
But he claims that he came from space.
Yeah.
It's a different take on the Christmas story, isn't it?
Can I say what this is about?
Yeah, it's Jesus or the Archangel Gabriel, right? It's that story, which is the way you look at it.
But I think the reason this has happened is it's a strand in British music started by David Bowie with his song Spaceman.
Right.
Starman.
Which is... It's another dill mint moment.
Double down, Henry. Look. He's inflating.
Spaceman.
The hackles. The venom is coming out of his eyes.
Yeah, he did a song Starman, and obviously Space Oddity, and he had this kind of space age belly thing. Yeah. And ever since that, British pop people reaching for credibility have gone for, I think it's time, Chris, we're going to have to put out a space song. Lady in Red. It's huge amongst the sort of illegal kidney black market and kidneys. They love it, but it's not getting you a lot of cred. It's a popular song, but no cred. So you go for the space song. So obviously Elton John did it with
Rocket Man,
mm-hmm. And Chris de Burgh's done it with Spaceman. It's just like a British thing that you go, I'll do a space song, because it's hard to place myself with my lyrics. British is a bit, I don't know, I'm just going to go space. You can always go space if you're British.
I really like this theory.
Okay, good.
It feels good to me.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
But the elephant in the room is dearth of examples.
I'm not going to fall on the dearth of examples. Sword hill
what
again.
What was that? Space man.
I always
yeah, space man.
To...
Always going round and round.
Babylon Zoo.
One. So Babylon Zoo is space man. I'm sorry, that's a great example, Mike. It's literally called space man. I mean, that's a great example.
And were they taken seriously?
Well, it did well at the Euros. At the
Euros?
Didn't it? It did well at the Eurovision.
It wasn't the Eurovision song.
Oh, no, the Eurovision one was space that we did well at a few years ago.
Oh, the guy with the long hair. And
come
the...
to space with me and a big space pilgrimage or whatever. That's well, you can yes. always just stick out a space song if you're British and it does all right. We're going on a fun bus to Mars. Space. It was that, was it?
It was.
You can always just stick it in a space lyric and you'll be okay. You'll be okay.
Sam Ryder.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he did a song called...
I'm loving you round the Milky Way, baby. Galaxy and fun with the space chums.
The song was called Spaceman.
There you go.
Yeah.
We've gone from dearth to girth, I would argue here, in terms of examples.
Walking on the Moon by The Police.
Yep.
That's a good song. Walking on the Moon.
Get my fire! Walking on the Moon. By the way, if you want to hear what Sting sounds like, you just put any Geordie, you put upside down in a metal bin, that's the sound of a Geordie. That's what happens. That's how they got a lot of the effects on the police stuff. That's just reminded me, you know, in the song The Boxer by Simon Garfunkel?
Yeah. Mm.
You know that sound?
Yeah.
Do you know how they made that?
Yeah, they had a big echoey room, didn't they?
No, it's Alan Shearer with a bin on his head.
It's none of your software. They're shipping in Geordies.
Oh, Garfunkel is punching him in the kidneys. Oi! Oof!
Did you remember to bring your bin, Alan? Oh, no.
How did they coax Alan Shearer all the way to New York then in a bin?
it was a deal with, because Paul Simon was into witchcraft at the time.
Right.
And it was a deal to be one of the greatest strikers that the 90s had ever seen.
Oh, I
see. What he got in return.
So he sold his soul to Paul Simon.
He sold his soul to Paul Simon. And that's why he did that celebration, just one hand up, aka the Nazi salute, aka Christopher's dad is Hitler. It all ties
it's all
back.
Connected.
It's all connected.
And the man in space isn't the Archangel Gabriel. It's actually Goebbels, who's to this day floating in his escape craft in orbit.
That's right.
We've solved it, guys.
Bloody solved it. Is that offensive or is that all right?
Oh, I expect so, to someone.
Maybe to the Goebbels family.
Yeah. Yeah, space. Space lyrics. And you know the one where I think, and I know that Elton John, before people have it hurt me for bringing down a sacred cow, he's very much alive and I think in good health. He stopped touring. So I think we can have a pop at Elton John.
Wow.
Why is it people get so defensive at Elton John?
He's a bit of a sacred cow, isn't he?
He's such a sacred cow. But irrespective of that, I can't remember. We may have discussed this on the pod before, but I do think the lyrics of Rocket Man smack of someone who's desperate, like, I'm sick of opening the paper and seeing Bowie everywhere I turn. I want my space song. Get on it, Tim Rice. I don't care.
Who's Bernie Taupin?
I don't care if you. Oh, Bernie Taupin's my writer. I don't care, Tim Rice. I'm going to lock you in this basement until you give me a space song. I've got 10 different people in 10 different basements all trying to knock out a space song for me.
One of them's Alan Shearer.
One of them, yeah, one of them is Sue Goebbels. Goebbels is great niece. I'm trying all different angles on this one. And if one of you can write me a spaceman hit, I'll let you live.
That was the deal. And it was Bernie Taupin in the end that came up with it.
And that's why Tim Rice is dead.
I think that's why Tim Rice is dead, isn't it? And
then, yes, both.
Is Tim Rice dead?
No, but in this theory that he killed everyone who couldn't write him a space song.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Rice is dead and was replaced by a double.
That's right.
Yeah.
Have we discussed the lyrics in Rocket Man?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. But it's a subtopic that we maybe have touched on in the past. I don't know if it's on the pod or elsewhere, where it's that class of song where as soon as it comes up, someone inevitably goes, you realise that's about heroin.
How is it?
But that's the other thing. Sorry, that's the other thing that all British songs can reach to is, right, the Spaceman song isn't working.
Yeah.
I've already done Lady in Red.
Of course, Christopher's heroin work.
We'll have to put a rumour out that one of these songs is about heroin, actually.
Basically, we'll get a bunch of six-year-olds to write a song and we'll say it's about heroin. Oh, thank God. I'm a spicy lemon with the head of a moose. Look at my shoes. They look like a goose. La 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 la. Oh, such an interesting song about the devastating effect of heroin. Yeah, right. As long as you've got enough Rolos to keep a six-year-old happy for like 3 hours, you get yourself a classic British heroin song.
Yeah, they can conjure the image of the litter-strewn streets of Wolverhampton through the eyes of someone on the come-down.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So is Rocket Man about heroin, Mike, or is that conjecture?
It's definitely one of the songs that's in that group.
The interpretation.
Well, no, but I think that's so that goes with the space song, doesn't it? And it went with Bowie and space. It's all a bit like out there and like, oh, is it to do with drugs? Because remember, the people buying these songs are British, suburban, like...
Geography teachers.
Geography teachers, isn't it? So they want to get a bit of... vicarious, like, excitement. So the lyrics of Rocket Man, she packed my bag last night's pre-flight.
Yeah.
I mean, pre-flight, you could argue, is a slightly banal lyric to put in a song, pre-flight. I mean, if I was describing my own packing as pre-flight, you'd say, why are you using such weirdly over-formal language? Do you know what I mean?
Pre-flight, well, that's the cravings, isn't it?
Pre-flight. That's the cravings, yeah. 0 hour, 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. That's just literally telling us what time a flight's leaving. I'm going to be high as a kite by then.
Here we go.
Okay.
It's hard to find, but if you look.
Yeah, there's something in there, isn't there?
Look through the lyrics.
Okay, I miss the air so much, I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. So hence, that's him feeling lonely on drugs. So, I mean, there's an argument he could have just said, I had some heroin last night. It made me high as a kite.
Felt a bit ropey this morning.
And it's creating, you know.
Relationship difficulties. I can't seem to get around to renewing my residential parking permit. Ooh, drugs.
Welcome to Behind the Heroin Lyrics with Henry Smacker.
Ex-heroin addict who now goes around spending a lot of time working with kids in schools about heroin. It turns out a lot of them hadn't even thought about heroin until he told them not to take it, and some of them actually got into it just out of interest. So, yeah, there will always be some collateral heroin take up after Henry Smacker visits your school, just so you know. And also to avoid them getting involved in the nasty black market element of heroin, Henry Smacker is actually a fairly safe person to buy heroin from. I think it's going to be a long, long time. Touchman brings me around again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, I'm a rocket man. Burning out his shoes up here alone. Okay. It's okay.
It's really good.
Okay, next, here's where I think the lyrics start to get...
Mars ain't the kind of place to raise your kids.
That's by any metric, in any medium, that isn't a good line.
Oh, I disagree.
Mars ain't the kind of place to raise your kids. You like that?
I do like it. I like it a lot.
So why is that good? Is that because you thought maybe there was some doubt around that idea before he cleared it up for us?
He's so far removed with his drug-addled brain from the world.
So do you think that's him?
It's like he's on Mars. It's like, you know.
Yeah, but so he's got, this is the trouble with the heroin lyric, because you've got a bit of an escape clause, which is, the point that the lyric is so bad is because it's from the point of view of a heroin addict. It's like when you try and tell a teenager why their short story's bad or poem's bad, they always go,
why are you doing that?
That's the point that it's badly structured. That's because the character's bad. Is this something?
If you're not doing heroin awareness in schools, you're just going to schools and telling people, telling budding 14-year-old writers that their short stories are shit. I've been in your bedroom. I've found your secret collection of short stories under your pillow. I've had a look. Here's a toss.
And before you complain, you are being restrained by two heavies. Yep. So you're just going to sit through this. I've gone through your entire short story collection. It's on PowerPoint, and I shared it with the school. No, but you know that thing of like, have you ever tried to give someone the feedback about something or had it yourself? Whatever, something you really care about, they'll go, no, this bit is a bit bad. And you go, no, that's because of the point of it is that it's supposed to be bad from that point of view in that moment. That's the whole point. Because it's heroin. Yeah? So heroin people might think that you might want to raise your kids on Mars. That's the point.
You know, last week when you said that one of the ingredients of that salad was dill, were you actually saying heroin? Is that what you were trying to do?
That's the whole point of it.
Greek salads are about heroin or space or Jesus.
Exactly. All salads are a metaphor. That whole salad is just a metaphor for getting messed up on space, on
space horse.
Crystal horse. Yeah. So Mars isn't the kind of place to raise your kids. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's cold as hell.
It's cold as hell.
What? In fact, it's cold as hell. So he was thinking, is he thinking that I'm thinking that it's the perfect temperature for kids?
Yeah.
It's actually cold. What does that mean? So Mars isn't the kind of place to raise your kids, right? Yeah. So what he's saying is, on the one hand, Mars isn't the kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, even more so, it is cold. What does that mean?
Well, because it seems like it's party time, fun time, drug time, but it's not warm, party fuzzy. It's cold, it's lonely, it's dangerous.
Oh, okay. But okay, I think the trouble with it is the idea that there's any kind of shared assumption that Mars is a good place to raise your kids. But what you're saying is he's deliberately creating a kind of premise that you don't share, and he's then deconstructing the premise that I didn't share anyway. In fact, it's a mad premise. It's like saying you shouldn't marry a horse. The horse isn't the kind of thing you should marry. In fact, they've got really sharp hooves. So what? What do you mean? I didn't want to marry one anyway. Like, you need to give me examples.
Marrying a horse is quite a good metaphor for heroin addiction.
It really is, isn't it? Okay, come on, you can't defend this. So Mars isn't the kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell.
And there's no one there to raise them if you did.
And there was no one there to raise them if you did.
Yeah.
What?
I've always wondered what if you did
if you did mean. If you did raise them there, you couldn't, because there isn't anyone there. Yeah. What? That's like saying, it's like, well, I didn't say we could in the first place. That's like saying, hey, you want to marry a horse? Yeah, well, actually, they've got really sharp hooves. And actually, you can't even marry one anyway. Why did you want to marry one? Why stop having a go at me? It's your crazy idea.
Yeah, that's about the infuriating resilience of addiction in a loved one. It's a bit like the old kind of, you know, if a lion spoke English, you wouldn't be able to understand what they said anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're so far removed.
Yeah,
from society. It's impenetrable.
No one there to raise them if you did. And all the science, I don't understand. It's just my job 5 days a week.
That bit I've always thought is weird, because in my head that means his job is to be a scientist on the moon or whatever he is, on Mars.
A scientist or someone looking after kids? Is he a nanny on the moon? This is his ad.
Elton John, moon nanny.
Yeah, I mainly just do the albums and stuff to support the moon nanny work.
Elton, shouldn't we just put like a double page ad in the Times or something, let the people know you're doing this moon nanny thing? No, I'm going to conceal it within the lyrics of a song. Ooh, yeah. And it's going to be a huge success, you'll see.
People are going to really want me to be their moon nanny.
My lunar nursery will be huge.
But I suppose I get the heroin thing. He's saying it's his job 5 days a week, so he's like, that's all he does now.
Are they weekends off heroin? Does that mean?
Yeah, it's a bit like a sort of fasting diet. Yeah.
Okay. And that's kind of it, isn't it? Then it's the rest of it. I mean, I do think it's a really good song, just because it's just such a great tune. And he's a great singer.
And the lyrics are good.
And the lyrics are actually quite good, it turns out. With the caveat of, it's a heroin song, so you can just write whatever you want. Okay. I'm glad we had that little chat. Do you feel like that was cathartic in any way?
I think it was for you. I think the Dill thing has been bothering you.
I feel that's been cathartic for me. I'm feeling much more.
And I'm glad you feel okay, Henry, because out there are thousands of people who just this week had a dill flavoured cup.
I know.
What
have you got to say to them?
I can't apologise enough to those people.
They might write some good song lyrics about it, though, one day.
It's true.
I'm a spicy lemon with the head of a moose. Look at my shoes, they look like a goose. La 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 la.
Ooh, drugs.
Let's turn on the beam machine. This week's topic I sent in by Charlie from St. Louis.
Ooh. Hello, Charlie.
Or St. Louis.
St. Louis, I reckon. Thanks, Charlie.
I think so.
Take me to St. Louis.
Take me to St. Louis. Yeah. Take me to St. Louis. Yeah.
That's a song, isn't it? Sung
yeah,
by...
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
What's her face? What's her name?
Lulu.
Chattanooga Cheryl.
Judy Garland.
Judy Garland.
In one of those films that she's in. Meet Me in St. Louis, it's called.
Meet Me in St. Louis. It's one of those films that has an exclamation mark. In glorious Technicolor. And it's huge, big, Meet Me in St. Louis, exclamation mark. You never watched them?
I watched it at a recent Christmas because it's got one of the big Christmas songs in it, like...
Old Man River, the old man. That one. They've always got that song in it. He keeps on rolling. Isn't that song? That song's in all those films, I think.
Well, it's in Showboat, which is the film it's in.
Yeah. It's in Showboat. Is that exclamation mark? In glorious Technicolor.
I think that's question mark.
That's question mark.
Showboat? Meet Me in St. Louis has got Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas in it.
Does it really?
That's where that's from.
Well.
I sometimes have this thing, which is I feel like I need to be watching more of these vintage films. Mm-hmm. Are the only Seven Brides for Seven Brothers? That's another. I think it's not the one with Old Man River in. I'm not sure.
It's Showboat.
Oh, that's Showboat, sorry.
Which is about a paddle steamer. It's like a circus on a paddle steamer.
Okay.
It's good. It's good stuff.
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers is quite good. Do you know that one?
No.
Oh, that's good. But it's problematic.
Is it a cowboy one? I've got a feeling I've seen that as a small child, but not since.
It's a cowboy one. Oh, that's got a great song, which is... I love these songs they have with incredibly deep-voiced men. So there's one which goes, "Bless your beautiful hide." "Bless your beautiful hide."
You've got quite a nice Mississippi bass going on.
You've got a lovely sort of
I've got a good resident Mississippi bass, it's true. Yeah. I've always got that to fall back on. That's always been my plan B. Is Mississippi crooner. But it's problematic because it's about this guy. He's got seven sons, and they just go and kidnap seven women and marry them.
Yeah. Which at the time seems a very romantic tale.
It seems really romantic, yeah.
A tale of initiative.
Yeah.
Well, this week's topic, as sent in by Charlie from St. Louis.
Or St. Louis.
Or St. Louis, is wine.
Oh, la, la.
Ooh, la, la, indeed.
Wine. Hits me in one of my most uncomfortable areas of feeling that I should know about it, but or that people would think I might, or people might think that but nothing. I've got, do you know what I mean?
As part of the Metropolitan Elite?
As part of the Metropolitan Elite, as the...
Tastemaker.
The complex, uber-sophisticated web of my personality that I conjure, this web that I spin... It's one of the areas where
it should be a bolt in your urbane quiver, shouldn't it?
Exactly. But it's actually a chink in my pretentious armour. Because if you get yourself a toehold in that chink in my armour, if you get a crowbar in there and you start cranking, you will open me up like a crab. The whole edifice tumbles. It's a real weak spot.
Yeah.
It's an Achilles heel, I think, for me. I don't think either of you are big wine people either, are you? From my experience.
I don't know anything about wine. I like a glass of wine, sure. Yep. I don't know anything beyond what's in the contents of the movie Sideways. That's it.
Yeah. Well, there's a thing in Sideways where he says, is it like, I'll never drink a Merlot or something?
Merlot is bad.
So that I know that from that film, Merlot.
But I've definitely drunk Merlot and thought, that's all right. Yeah. So I know enough from that I don't have the palate to be a wine expert or anything like that.
Well, because you quite like Merlot.
Yeah, as it turns out, yeah. I'm one of those thugs.
Yeah.
I'm not really a wine person at all, unless I'm abroad, and then I'm like Mr. Wine. Okay. So I remember going on holiday to Rome and going to like a sort of wine pub, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it just being one of the greatest nights of my life in terms
of really
them just bringing me wine after wine and going, ah, yes, and you'll taste the minerals as this one was.
Yeah.
The grapes are from the southern side of Mount Etna, and you know, and you do taste it, and you go, what?
Yeah. And of course, round the back, the scene you're not seeing is the old man saying to the son, his son, the waiter, so it's very simple. You just take a Ribena and the goat does one little bit of piss in the Ribena. Then you mix it up and you give it to him, but with a nicer smile, very important. But it's,
Say something about minerals.
Say something about minerals.
And he'll think about minerals and then he'll think that he can taste minerals.
So yeah, when I'm abroad, I quite like to try the local wine.
Yeah.
And I enjoy myself. I like it. But I'm not really... Like in a pub in Britain, I'm never getting a glass of wine. But that's because it's going to be shit wine, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I really get... I think a little bit more than I used to, but get this distinction even between good and bad wine, really.
Well, the thing to do, Henry, is to work out whether it tastes nice.
Yeah, but again, you've cranked... You've got in the armour there with the... That's the first crank.
The carapace is... You can hear the first crack.
You can feel... Because what you're doing, you're tugging away the carapace. And remember, of course, it's linked to my actual flesh, that carapace, with strands...
Crab style.
Crab style. With strands of crabby fibres, yeah?
Okay.
So you're tearing at my very, very flesh as you yank it off. It's not. Doesn't it slip on and off like a helmet? It's not like that, Ben. It's carapace grown out of me. So you're getting very, very deep. But you're cranking it. You've given the crowbar. You've got your foot on it there. Because, well, I forgot what you said. What was it?
I just pointed out that whether something's good or not might come down to whether it tastes nice to you.
Oh, yeah. But you see, but then you're going into the... My personality is such a construction in this respect around these things. I don't know whether what I like or don't like, or whether I like it or not is irrelevant. When you've got the harsh glare of the London social scene, yeah, when you're under those lights, I'm looking across the table, I'm looking for a friendly face.
Claire Balding.
She knows you've ordered the dill. She's wondering what you're going to choose as a wine to go with it.
To go with the dill. I've gone for the dill starter, which is just a plateful of dill. I've got to get this decision right. Hugh Bonneville is giving me daggers, as is Sir Kenneth Branagh. You know who else is? Olivia Colman. And you're in Nova Scotia is southeast of Canada.
Left out Hackman.
Oh, I forgot. I left out Hackman because he's not part of the London social scene.
No, fair play.
Or at least not at a tier that I'm at.
As opposed to Nova Scotia, which is...
It very much is.
Turning heads left, right and centre.
Oh, yeah.
On Piccadilly.
It's the hot new wine growing region, isn't it? Nova Scotia.
Look, my personality, I've been smelted in the harsh glare of...
the Trocadero Centre.
The unforgiving lights.
Of M&M World.
M&M World and before it, the Swiss Centre. It was.
The Book of Mormon playing on the corner.
Yeah. Mamma Mia. Mm-hmm. Les Mis. Blood Brothers.
Soho, Battersea,
Old Southwark,
Streatham,
Vauxhall,
Tufnell Park,
Barnet, technically,
Madame Tussauds,
The Cenotaph,
Halfords, Zone 5.
gap between your provincial existence and this metropolitan utopia. Next stop, urban enlightenment.
The glamorous London life of Henry Packer.
Hang on a second. Is that Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber? No, it can't be. Because you're Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. I know!
I don't even really know if I like it or what I like with wine. It's quite hard, I find. But we've talked about this kind of thing before, but with drinking as well, it's something that you start doing when you're trying to impress people as a sort of teenager and stuff. And like, it takes a while to then catch up and work out, what do I actually like? I mean, I think I like the idea of a glass of red, you know, with beef. Or lamb, whatever, you know, with red meat, a glass of red. It feels like a nice idea, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But do I actually, would I prefer?
A Corona.
A Corona.
A glass of lemon squash.
Or some lemon squash, I don't know. I mean, I was offered a glass of red wine on Easter Sunday.
Was this communion?
It was over Sunday lunch.
It's quite bold in communion to go, have you got anything? Have you got white?
Yeah. You've got a rosé. If it's cold. Or just you know, pop an ice cube in it.
Can we spritzer this? Can we spritzer it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to rustle me up a mojito, would you?
Tell you what, it's quite earthy, this red. It's a bit gritty. We could put a bit of fruit in it. We could sangria this. It'll come up sweet.
You could sangria it. Lovely. Get it out in jugs. Get it out in jugs. People will
lemonade
it.
Sweeten it up a bit.
You charge $5.95 for that. You get the lemon juice, you get the lemon squash and everything from Aldi. You could be making £2-3 a pint.
And let's replace these wafers with wasabi peas.
We've basically just reinvented the pub. You get the pews facing each other. You get shorter pews. Get them facing each other. Little round tables in between.
Replace the organ with a jukebox.
That altar can be bar billiards. Easy peasy. No problem.
Gerald's wife and Gerald, actually. Imagine them. No clothes in a cage.
It's your classic English pub.
You got yourself a classic English pub.
So you're having your red wine, eat lunch.
I find it quite heavy. I think I generally do prefer a light beer. I'm just going to say that. I think my thing about if I have wine is I'm just going to... I think I get drunk quite fast on it. I think that's the other problem.
Yeah, that is the problem.
It's really strong, isn't it, wine?
Yeah.
It really gets you hammered.
Because it goes down too quickly. If I'm at a situation, for example, if there's a wedding or something and it's just being freely poured, I can get myself in trouble quite quickly.
That's my thing with wine. I think like with wine, you're getting hammered. But maybe it's because we drink wine. Maybe it's a British thing that I sort of drink wine at the pace that I would drink a pint, I suppose, maybe, or something. I'm not very good at sipping it. But I just think like, if I'm on the wine, I'm getting absolutely hammered. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it just feels like a real extreme choice to have a glass of wine.
I do like that kind of that idea we have of life in France, where they have like a small, tiny little glass of wine with lunch, and it's all very
little round, little boule.
Yeah,
They can handle it. They can enjoy a little glass, and that be that for that meal.
In France, they you know that French service stations are called routiers.
Yeah,
and quite often, so there's one. There's a few I've been to where. They're basically for truckers. So it's like, it's a known stop for truckers. So there'll be the massive car park and the truckers come in for their lunch and you go in, you have a great lunch.
Yeah. Be like a three-courser prefixed kind
superb
of.
Superb.
Yeah.
Three-course prefixed.
Unlimited, beautiful, fresh bread.
Like the starter one might be like a hoof, you know, stuffed with prawns, whatever, an ox hoof stuffed with prawns. It'd be like really quite interesting fare.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the main course would be like a goose head.
Stuffed in the mouth of an osprey.
Yeah, exactly. Every table has a carafe of red wine on it as you go in. So it's not even, you don't even have to order it. And this is for truckers. So you know, they're like, this is being sort of standard, you know, like you get wine in you or whatever. Even though your job involves driving. But it's fine. It seems to work all right. I think because they're all hammered, you know, you're drunk, you crash your car and someone else is drunk, or you might hit a pedestrian who's also drunk.
It means your lorry's nice and floppy, doesn't it?
Exactly. Everyone's floppy. There's much less abrasive, isn't it? Much less breakage wounds in French hospitals. And then the ambulance will turn up. They'll be drunk. So you may crash on the way to the hospital. Everyone in the hospital's drunk. They get you in a wine drip. Don't they? and invite your drunk kids around to see you. Probably crash on the way. But it sort of works. It all evens itself out.
This could be construed as horrifically xenophobic, were it not for the fact that, I mean, Henry, you're the greatest Francophile.
I'm a huge Francophile, so I'm allowed.
Created.
I'm allowed.
Whereas in Britain, I think I remember seeing a thing about the average size of a wine glass in Britain.
Oh, in a pub. It's like a third of a bottle.
Which is a third of a bottle, exactly.
It's bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas when in France, they always have those tiny little nice little lunch-sized ones.
Yeah. What do you think of the whole culture in Britain of like, mummies having a glass of wine? What is that? Or like posters that are to do with...
Prosecco o'clock.
Every day's a wine day, or I don't know. This is what mummy calls water. what are all those jokes? What do you think of that whole subculture? Are you into that?
Am I into it?
I don't know. What's your take on it?
It feels quite old hat, doesn't it?
It's a bit gendered in a way that's a bit grim.
It is gendered. It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess then you get, it's in the same way that men sort of get birthday cards with like beer on it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There is definitely an idea in Britain that beer's for men and wine's for women, which is very weird.
I think that's very British. I don't think that happens in France, I don't think. But I do think there's something about the British attitude to, what we've done with wine. Because it's very much like, basically everyone in Europe makes wine, don't they, apart from us?
Well, we make a bit of wine in the south of England, but...
I think we're quite defensive about it. It's actually quite good, actually.
Okay, so I'm going to say, first of all, just to clear things up, I'm going to say apologies to all the British producers of the overpriced filth that they call wine. No, I'm sure it's great. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But historically, Britain has been, it's like wine is just, it's this continental, slightly glamorous kind of thing, isn't it, for us, wine?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Yeah, it doesn't feel intrinsic to our culture. It feels like it's an import.
It's a treat.
It's Spain, France, Italy.
Yeah.
Isn't it? That's how we think of those as like...
It's like getting yourself a Hyundai.
It's a status thing, isn't it? It's sophistication. Mm. And the vintage of the Hyundai matters, doesn't it?
2009.
A decent year. A solid year. Not a great year. It's no 2007. It's a solid year. And Ben, you can tell the vintage of a Hyundai, can't you, just by cracking the door and giving it a sniff, can't you?
Yeah, and sometimes I like to... just drink a bit of the liquid that's collected in the footwells, which is...
Roll it around your mouth.
Yeah.
It's the chalky soils around the factory where they were built in South Korea.
I think what's happened then with wine, okay, in Britain, is that wine, because it's not seen as native somehow, it's got this European sophistication to it in our minds. So what's happened, I'm just going to trace the origin of this slightly gendered stereotype thing about mummy and her wine or whatever. Mm. But I think it then became a kind of acceptable way to drink because it's like sophisticated. It's like being on holiday. It's like going to...
Yeah, it's not like just downing pints at home.
So it's not like downing pints at home.
Yeah.
But so therefore that the humour is in this idea that mummy's getting in a bit of a drink under the radar because it's wine. It's sophisticated. It's do you know what I mean? But the other thing which I think is quite funny about that is the size of wine glasses in Britain. The amount of wine that we can put into a glass, which is supposedly, so in a way it's masquerading as this thing that you have with a bit of food or, you know, while watching the sunset in Palermo, whatever. But you get this huge glass, basically the size of like, an industrial bucket. Sort of. But I've noticed this, that sometimes when someone's pouring wine into a glass in Britain, it can just last for so long. You'll be chatting to someone like, you know, a sister-in-law, an uncle, whatever, and they'll be pouring the wine, talking to you.
You've managed to describe the entire plot of Total Recall before they finished. Put the screw cap back on.
So hang on. So was it a holiday or it was a holiday? Was it just a holiday he was going on, but he got to choose? No. So he thought he was going on a holiday, but he was actually trapped in the. He was actually still on Earth. Second, does that mean, do you think Mars will be habitable one day? Well, we'd have to look into recreating an atmosphere. Sort of recreating a false atmosphere.
I mean, there's no place to raise your kids, is it? There's no one there to do it if you did. What's that mean?
What? I'll tell you what.
Tell me that lyric again once I've downed this and it might make some sense. Who knows that? How long it takes to fill a glass of wine in Britain?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's extraordinary. And also,
You take
as long as there's a stem on the bottom of that receptacle, you're okay.
Yeah.
But that stem is being asked to do a lot of work. And then that big, because also, I think, you know, that's what it is. It's because of this concept of just a glass. I'm just going to have one glass. Mm. So what we've done in Britain is we've designed the biggest glasses that can be held by the thinnest stems on Earth. We've employed the greatest glass blowers on Earth to design these things. And you fill it up, and essentially you then have to crack onto the sex. Hang on, just give me a sec. So pause. So Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's rolling around, his eyes are popping out. So just pause there. I'm just going to open the second bottle. Look up.
Time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
This is from Andra.
Hello, Andra.
Thanks, Andra.
Dear Beans, long-time listener, first-time email sender here, hailing all the way from the dreamland that is the Czech Republic.
Mm. Wow.
I think this is our first Czech.
I think it is, isn't it?
Correspondence.
Yeah.
Upon hearing about Henry's fear of Rumpelstiltskin's name. Yeah, you didn't like that, did you? Rumpelstiltskin.
It just doesn't make any sense, does it, as a name? And also, add to that name and someone flying around on a ladle. How terrifying is that?
Rumpelstiltskin. Oh, hang on.
What happened there?
Sorry, I played that too early.
But that was... You didn't warn that. You didn't, I thought that was a genuine haunting. I thought it was genuinely a witch. Because that felt like it came from the darkest forests of you know, medieval Europe.
I thought I was going to see a label come across the screen and splat you across the face for a moment.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that was a time where they say, you know, around about that area in medieval times, Europe was thickly, densely covered in dark, sinister forest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They say like up to 7 out of 10 maidens,
well, wolves.
You kiss them, they turn into a wolf, into a crabbed old wolf. No, so very, very difficult time for dating, wasn't it? Because on the one hand, you didn't have the apps, so it was more face to face. You didn't have all that stuff that goes with the apps, but the amount of dates that would end with you getting your face torn off by a wolf, mm-hmm. much higher.
Andra writes, I'm informing you about the name used in the Czech version of the story, which sees your rumple and raises you a crumper and also a camper, creating a rumple, crumper, camper. Attached, please find my rendition for reference. Here you go, Henry.
Yes, please.
Rumple, zimper, zamper. A bit slower this time. Rumple, zimper, zamper. There you go.
Henry's wincing.
Absolutely blood curdling, isn't it? It's the rolling of the R's and the kind of...
Rumpelstiltskin Samper.
It sounds also like it could go on and on and on. It's like of names.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, I think one of the reasons it's so sinister is because it almost sounds like a fun name, like a circusy. Because it's got that, you know, the way circuses are scary and the way clowns are scary because they're sort of fun, but not. It's like rumple, dumple, bumple, wumple. It's like sinister fun. Clippy, cloppy, wappy, lappy, blah, 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 blah. Come and play with my toys. Come and play with my maracas. Ha, ha, ha. I will stab you with my maracas. Do you know what I mean? Like poisoned candy floss, that kind of evil.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Andre.
Yeah, brilliant.
Nice to get an email from the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
Jake writes, hello.
Hello, Jake.
I too drilled my hand while listening to Three Bean Salad.
It's an epidemic.
Coincidence?
Oh.
That refers to a couple of weeks ago, someone else had drilled through their hand.
Yeah.
Three Bean Salad.
Sorry about that.
We'll have to add to the warnings when we, I think, explicit content and, you know, just turn your drill off for a minute.
Do not operate industrial machinery, isn't it? It's one of those. Are we in that category now?
I think it seems like it, yeah.
Yeah.
We also had an email from Sam. He says, you spoke about having a missing finger and about how that could be used as a talking point. As someone who is missing the index finger on my left hand, I can assure you it is a talking point.
Mm.
Even more so when I've had a few too many beverages and start performing a magic missing finger trick, but with an actual missing finger. That nice. Would be good.
Yes, it doesn't quite have the payoff at the end, doesn't it, when it's just the finger's missing. I mean, what's the payoff magic from a magic point of view? He doesn't get to replace the finger.
Well, I guess it's like, because as a kid, you're amazed by the missing finger trick, right?
Mm. Yes.
And you grow up and you realise that it's just the other knuckle or whatever, and it's not really a missing finger. So it's like a double bluff, where there's actually this is a missing finger.
Yeah.
And we don't know if he's still got that, if it is missing, if maybe he's got it and he's had it stuffed and he puts it in your mojito or whatever, you know?
That's a nice little touch. Mm. That would be a nice touch, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
He says, however, as a member of the agricultural community, brackets, sort of, I'm a tree surgeon, I can assure you that having a missing finger is not seen as a badge of honour. If anything, it's used by most of the lads at work to make me look like a tit. It doesn't help that I lost it within the first month of working as a tree surgeon, and that I'm worryingly accident prone for a bloke who climbs trees with a chainsaw in his hand.
Well, fair play to him for keeping going in that career. I mean, most people, if they are for a month in, had lost 1/10 of the digits on their hands.
Yeah.
Most people would go, do you know what? I'm looking down the barrel of, after a year of this, I'm looking down the barrel of
at this rate,
no digits, I might just retrain.
Which, admittedly, will be an incredible magic trick for kids, admittedly, but... Yeah, that's tricky, isn't it? But then statistically, you think maybe it's just...
You've got it out the way.
This is the tithe I've paid.
But he says, however, it can't have deterred me that much, as 4 years later, I'm still cutting down trees. All the best, Sam. Fair play, Sam. Well done.
Yeah,
fair play, Sam.
Yeah,
but I think you can get on fine without a finger, basically, can't you? I think it's...
Well, it's time for Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Uh-oh.
Accessing Listener Bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Hi Beans. In the recent episode of The Beach, Henry asserted that losing a little finger would be a minor inconvenience.
Yeah.
This is wrong. The little finger accounts for approximately a third of total grip strength.
Interesting. Hang on. Is this coming from a koala? Is that true? Okay, go a third.
It would be better to lose the ring finger if you had to lose one.
Oh, really?
Because that would cause a reduction of grip strength by a fifth.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yeah. We've had a few people telling us that.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Good to know.
Nick writes, Dear Beans, while listening to Nell's story on the latest episode of Three Bean Salad about putting a drill through their hand, I sliced off the top of my finger.
Oh, God. Come on, guys.
With an unfamiliar vegetable peeler.
While listening to us, or just
while listening to us talk about someone putting a drill through their hand.
Oh my God, the irony.
Come on, everyone. Safety first, please.
What have we started? What have we created?
What have we created?
Okay, can please no one be listening to this unless they're wearing chainmail gloves from this point on now.
Yeah.
Henry, I should have asked, do you accept the previous bollock?
Was that a bollock?
Well, you said that you could lose your little finger with no...
100% accept that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, That was foolish of me.
Played.
Bollocking accepted.
Thanks to everyone who signed up at the Patreon. Patreon.com/threebeansalad is the place to go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ad-free episodes. Bonus episodes. Our occasional film...
Film corner.
Film review. Don't think we call ourselves reviewers.
It seems a stretch.
There's a big lack of expertise and knowledge going on in that particular Patreon-only podcast.
Film chat.
And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike. From the Sean Bean Lounge,
you most certainly
where
do.
Mike spent last night.
Indeed.
And it was a bit of a controversial one last night, Mike, wasn't it? Because it was the puffin hunt. It's that time of year again.
It was indeed. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
You weld like an actor. Five words spoken at the Rotherham College of Technology to a young welding student by the name of Sean Bean. And we all know how the rest of that story goes. Sean Bean, of course, held on to the item being inspected by that horrified tutor as a memento. And that item was, of course, a welded metal puffin statuette, brought out once a year in the Sean Bean Lounge to commemorate the power of acting over welding, and needless to say, for the annual puffin hunt, which took place last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. Jacob Popple was charged with hiding the puffin this year and was destroyed immediately afterwards by Tommy Clark using Patrick's hominid spiralizer to preserve secrecy. Jason Bowden, Louise L. Beanor, Callum Tovey and Martin Tunstall teamed up to take apart Dave Carl, aka Super Dave, within whom they'd thought they'd heard metal clanking, and within whom they thought they'd find the iron puffin, but only found KP's lost ornamental hinge collection. Niall Rush and Sarah Hamici looked in the downstairs toilet no one uses because it has a glass revolving door, but only found Callum Gracie, who had emerged had been living in the system for 5 years. Dean Ricker-Smith was about to check down the back of every sofa until Karina pointed out that this was what won him the competition last year and was the reason Sean Bean had insisted all sofas be replaced with backless ones. Justin Thornhill, Dan Jerry Berrybean, Rob Reeves and Joel Carriageway searched in a wardrobe Sean Bean bought off C.S. Lewis in the 60s. And, despite spending 47 years in the land of the fawns, and thriving as parochial warlords and tax collectors, emerged in Sean Bean lounge time after merely 8 seconds, and the only thing that had aged were their necks. Faye Alexandra ransacked the locker room, but only found a kilo of uncut diamonds. Ran Urquhart Gilmore pulled up every premium carpet in the entire lounge and incurred 4 generations of debt. Helen McKenna, Kiara Hanna, G. Mackenzie Smith and Paul Grafton searched high and low with what they thought were metal detectors sold to them by Mr. Jamface, but which were actually broken banjos covered in tinfoil. Sarah Moa and Christopher Time went on the hunt in the robotic aviary without protective clothing and were adopted by a highly possessive sentient cassowary automaton. Diane Morrison, Samuel Hudson and Sam Spice tried the woodshed but frightened Sean Bean's pet adder and had to spend the rest of the evening calming it down with songs from Aspects of Love. Nikesh, Colin Bryson and Jamie Carter tried the infirmary as a team, but so too did a team made up of Morgan Kenning, Tansy and Gary Luncheonmeat, leading to a territorial duel adjudicated by Francesca Banchesca, in which the weapons of choice were Daniel Francis Watson Esquire's vintage iron lungs. The duel was so forceful it dislodged plaster from the ceiling in the room below, i.e. Sean Bean's smart casual clothing for prawns factory, smashing Tom Crawford Sharp's lucky China hat, ruining Poppy Mackenzie Smith's lucky cup of Pollock tears, and burying Martin Parfitt's lucky legs, torso, arms and head. Rosie Mills Smith thought tunnelling was the order of the day, and within just 90 minutes had caused Rich D to disappear into a sinkhole, given Sam Thompson the accidental volcanic geyser treatment, mistaken John Hailstone for a drill bit and blunted him permanently, inadvertently fired Gemma Bell through a top-secret transatlantic flume all the way to New York City, and directed Queeveen, Ali and Tom Hassan up a sub-tunnel and into His Majesty's prison ship, Vanguard. Dozer Q attempted to present a forged iron puffin and was expelled vertically, but Casey McCoola brought matters to a close admirably by hunting down the puffin slap-bang in the middle of Sean Bean's papier-mâché life-sized replica of the moon. Thanks all.
All right, that's the show. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by Connor, who now you, must
Connor.
Be the most prolific.
Thanks,
Connor. Oh, Connor, Connor.
Connor.
Connor, 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 Connor.
Brilliant.
He says, it is submission number 8.
Good timing.
And I thought it's about time I mix things up. Usually in these emails, I have some sort of barbed comment directed towards Henry. Mm. Yeah. But this time, I'm going to let the music do the talking.
Yeah, it's a, yeah. I've learnt not to trust Connor anymore. there's always a Trojan sort of...
Trojan guitar.
There's always a Trojan guitar in there somewhere.
He's written, Godspeed, Henry, for Mike and I are about to take you on a journey.
Oh, God.
Best Connor. P.S. I used AI to generate Mike's voice.
Ooh.
Wow.
Let's see what that sounds like.
Thanks, Connor.
That's the show. Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
See you next time.
See you soon. Cheerio.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Mike Wozniak, and I'm here to help Henry lose his mind. It's guitar time. Connor, let's go. That sounds way too much like modern wank. Do something more 1980s. actually taught Pam to play guitar. Can she join in for a solo? Cycle genres if Henry is to understand the full versatility of the electric guitar, blues, disco. Doing here? You've come to jam. You're tired of living a lie. What do you mean you're done with Henry and his incessant guitar bashing? Wait, is that a tiny guitar in your paw? Well then, what do you want to play? Did that come from Bluebell? Yes, I agree. Henry is a dull bastard.
That was something else.
That AI mic was fairly horrifying, wasn't it?
Really?
Well, it's most chilling for me, because if I do sound like that, that's...
It honestly didn't sound like you at all, really.
No.
Well, that's an immense relief. Thank you, Connor. I thought that was absolutely magnificent.
It's going to take me a while to process. Process all that.
Particularly the Pam solo.
The closest thing I can think of offhand to what that was like in my previous experience was the time we took a P&O ferry to France, and it was horrific weather conditions, and there was just sick everywhere, flowing out of the bathrooms, just all over the floor. Everyone was being sick. Yeah. That's cool. Kind of what it felt like to me. About that. Just there was this sick everywhere, and then there was just more sick, and then you went... escape into another room, and there was sick in there as well. It was like, you're just waiting for it to end.
You're on holiday, though.
You're on holiday. Yeah, true.
Precious memories.